Well, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in The Union Edge. And right now we're talking with the only man that I know of that has successfully run for office and been elected on more than one occasion to an office in Michigan. Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. Buck, welcome back.
Charles, it's always a pleasure to be with you and Angela and Brittany. And by and large, the best thing is we always have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, we always have fun. You know, that's one of the things about it. And you know, you and I have talked about, you know, the opposition, you know, the hard right wing, you know, the fire and brimstone. We hate everything that you do because you're not like us and so on and so forth.
Sure.
And continuing to lose market share. And they continue to lose market share. They continue to lose advertisers. And quite frankly, before you know it, the Koch brothers are going to be paying for, you know, 9 hours a day on every radio station in the country.
Well, they certainly have enough money.
No, not even with their money can you maintain that for a long period of time. But that's another story in and of itself.
Well, that's why I encourage everybody to listen to your program. That's where everybody should be.
Absolutely.
You know, hear something. Yeah. Listening, they want to listen to something fair and balanced. But like I said,
Fox
coming
News?
Into the home stretch here, Charles. I know you probably have talked a number of times today, and we'll talk about the election and the importance of voting. And like I said, I can't emphasize that enough.
Buck, let me ask you a question. You're an elected
sure.
official, and your township, your township supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had one of the people in your township walk up to you after you were elected and say, you know what, I didn't vote for you, but I'm glad everybody else did?
Yeah, probably not so many words. You know, there's two things that happen once you get elected. Once you get elected, it seems like that you got every vote, because once you get elected, everybody voted for you, even if they didn't. But there are people that sent emails or sent messages, and you know, and that's where the gratification lies. And when you get that type of assurance and saying that, there have been people say, "Well, I didn't vote for you the first time, but you know, after the first 4 years, I voted for it." That's even better yet. And like I said, many of us don't get that opportunity, especially here in Michigan, because you know we're a term limited in those types of, in state offices, in the governor's races, and even some cities are term limited. As a matter of fact, the city of Grand Rapids has a proposal on the ballot that will be voted on in a couple of weeks that does term limit the mayor and city council. So. Like I said, it's gratifying that when you know you can accomplish something. And that's why the beauty of what I call small government is that you can accomplish.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the problems that we have with the way we conduct business, especially with the House and the Senate.
Sure.
You know, I, as a political activist, and I'm fair and I'm reasonable and I'm balanced, and trust me, I have had lots and lots of experience in working both sides of the aisles on an issue. You know, when I was with the council, I could work the aisle as a union person on one side, and then on the other side, I could work it as a law enforcement person.
Mm-hmm.
But I have yet to have seen in person my sitting congressman. I have written letters to his office. I have sent emails. I have picked up the phone and called. I have talked to staffers. He has had staffers quit. Yeah, that's another story. But, you know, I don't get letters back. I don't get emails back. I don't get calls back. And that's inappropriate. And, you know, when you're a sitting congressman in the state of, you know, today, 700,000 people you represent,
mm-hmm.
you can't tell me sitting at Starbucks is doing your community time. You know, you can't do that. You can't tell me that sitting at Starbucks is how you get out there and you talk to those people in the community. And if you cannot even have one of your staffers take the time to pick up the phone and call me back, you're just not engaged.
No. Well, you know, I guess I don't you know, I don't know how, if they did any of the redistricting in Pennsylvania, or if the Republicans had control over the Democrats. Yeah. But that's what you get when you have that, because these, ours is the same way. Our guy here, Mr. Eisinger, yeah, he's the same way. You don't see Paul, and he knows in some aspects that he doesn't really have to, because of the way the lines are drawn. I mean, that's why these elections are getting more and more critical. I mean, we need to get progressive people back in by the time that it's time to redraw these lines. Otherwise, we're going to be in that same situation for another 10 years.
Yeah, and that's when it happens. Those congressional lines, they get gerrymandered.
Sure.
Every 10 years right after the census. And, you know, I have said this in the past, and I mean it. I think we should have third neutral parties drawing up these congressional districts.
Exactly.
It should not be, you know, it should not be allowed that people can draw it so they can stay in power. Yeah, and the way they draw it 55-45 towards their party's favor.
Yeah, or even worse.
Yeah, and if they can get away with it, and that's what they'll do, and they'll shave it just down to a point, and then they'll hope that maybe they can pick up another seat somewhere else.
There was a Supreme Court judge, I think he's retired, Stevens.
Right.
And I think he, a couple of days ago or a week ago perhaps, he had made a comment that the gerrymandering of districts was probably one of the worst things we've ever done to our democracy.
Right. It's not representational government. It's not representational government, because automatically you are deliberately cutting out 45-47% of the population in your district that you know that you are absolutely positively not going to address their needs.
You know, Charles, the bad thing about that is that most people will look at, say, if it's on the ballot to enforce term limits. Most people, and, you know, we could argue back and forth, and perhaps it's not a good idea, but there are people that are so frustrated with their current administrations that they're willing to do anything which would be vote for term limits to get rid of them. And that's a sad way to go, but if they'd say, okay, if we can't do it at the ballot box, then we need to set up term limits so that these people will go. I mean, you can look at it, the term limits any way you want, you can have a discussion, but in 90% of the people that I talk to about that, or when it comes up, is that, well, look, we have no other option. We don't seem like we can vote these people out. And which is kind of a sad way of looking at it, but it is the way that a lot of people feel.
Here's what you do. You move. You move into another congressional district. And that happens normally, and it changes up, and that's why it has to be done every 10 years. But we've got to do something about that. Buck, we got 30 seconds left. Any final words for us today?
Just the same scenario, Charles. Make sure everybody goes out and votes, and make sure that you get your neighbor, your friend, and your neighbor's neighbor, and make sure that you're out there when they're out there taking out the garbage. Make sure to remind everybody to vote, because it's imperative.
Yeah, absolutely. And do what I do. Put a yard sign in their yard, too.
Exactly. And have them come ask you about it. There you go.
Yeah, they'll come
ask you, brother.
Absolutely. Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
Here's an unusual uber-rich guy with an unusual message for his fellow 1% of the 1%ers. Nick Hanauer, who made billions as an internet entrepreneur, recently wrote in an open letter to other uber-richies that, quote, "The true job creators are middle-class consumers, not rich business people like us. America is dependent on a strong middle class," he says, "for it's their purchases that power the economy," noting that, "I earn about 1,000 times the median American annually, but I don't buy thousands of times more stuff." He points out that his family has 3 cars, not 3,000. So, Hanauer says, it's in the self-interest of America's corporate and financial elites to do all they can to lift wages, starting with a $15 an hour minimum wage. The old claim that paying workers more will destroy small businesses and halt job growth is simply not true, he says, adding that it's insidious to claim that helping the rich get richer is good for the economy, but helping the poor get richer is bad for it. Hanauer points out that, quote, "The 2 cities in the nation with the highest rate of job growth by small businesses are San Francisco and Seattle, which also have the two highest minimum wage levels in the country. To the coke-headed ideologues who say any minimum wage is just too much big government, this member of the Billionaires Club says the soundest way to shrink government is to decrease the need for it. Pay decent wages so people don't need food stamps, rent assistance, and other subsidies for life's basics. This is Jim Hightower saying, Hanauer concludes with this sobering warning to obtuse billionaires. No society can survive the glaring inequities we are building into the American economy. Stop these futile low-wage policies and bridge the widening divide, or, quote, the pitchforks are going to come for us. You can reach Nick Hanauer at nick@secondave.com.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
This is a guided meditation on parenting. Take this time to breathe deeply and close your eyes. Right now, you're completely in control. Unlike the time you and your son played basketball and you attempted to slam dunk. Or when you tried removing those raccoons from the basement. Concentrate on the soothing sound of my voice. Release the memory of when you wrestled with that beehive in your son's treehouse. Let go of the time you thought that skunk was a cat, or when you pulled into the garage with your son's bike on top of the car. Deep breaths. Deep breaths.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
While cutting molding with a 12-inch dual compound miter saw, while holding a newborn baby in your arms, when face-to-face with a congregation of alligators, with the ball in your hands and the entire freaking season on the line.
There are a million places you'd never consider texting,
as you're getting chewed out by
so
your
why would you do it while driving?
On what
NASCAR driver Casey
fails,
Kane here, asking you to please stop the text, and together we can stop the wrecks.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Get the message at StopTextStopWrecks.org.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. We appreciate it. Please follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just type in the Union Edge, and we appreciate that very much. Hey, folks, listen, go to our website, theunionedge.com. Sign up for our e-activist newsletter. If you're local, your organization could use some help. We'll get the word out for you. If you're willing to help, we'll get the word to you. It's called Solidarity. We're all in this together, and we appreciate your efforts towards that. Right now on the phone with us, we've got Paul Burton, who is the managing editor for the San Mateo Labor, which is a labor newspaper out in California. Paul, welcome to Union Edge.
Hey, good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Paul. You know, labor papers, not very many of them left in the United States, not as many as there used to be, but it's an important thing. Why do you believe that labor papers are so important?
Well, one thing is that we get the word out to union members about, you know, important issues, state, national, and local, that have to do with education, building trades, public sector work. And it's just a way to keep the members informed. And also one of the functions we serve is to let people know what's going on politically, whether it's around endorsed candidates or issues that they should be aware of. And again, you know, there's very few labor papers, and there's hardly any coverage of labor issues. I think there's maybe one or two newspapers that have a dedicated labor beat now.
Right, and usually all too often when a newspaper has an article about a labor union, it seems to me that they're all negative, you know, and labor's not getting, you know, even footing or a fair shake from a lot of newspapers.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we saw that here with the BART strike, which is a transit workers, public employees, you know, went on strike against BART a few different times, the Bay Area Rapid Transit train system. And the press coverage was just horrendous and abysmal and really reflected the corporate line and really didn't get into the issues of safety that the workers were advocating or the fact that they needed a raise and just, you know, slightly more compensation while the, you know, the agency hired a consultant that was famous for busting unions, and you know, it was really wasn't brought out in the mainstream media coverage.
Paul, as the managing editor for the San Mateo Labor, how do you keep it from being, you know, just a cheerleader squad, and how do you keep it on, you know, serious news?
Well, I mean, part of our function is to, you know, promote the good work that union members do, and, you know, to not be totally cheerleading, but really let people know that there's what the importance of unions are, and how members are involved in the community. And so, you know, we get information from the California Labor Federation, which we're affiliated with, and the AFL-CIO, so we can cover state and national issues. And we try to, you know, give the workers a voice and cover the issues that are, you know, there's a lot of important issues in the Bay Area around income inequality, you know, high-tech, you know, boom right now while housing prices are really high, but wages are low for bus drivers or security workers within the high-tech industry. So it's a matter of, you know, letting people know what's going on and what unions play a role in, you know, advocating for better conditions for everybody.
Paul, what is your experience when somebody who, as we refer to here, a member of the not yet union public gets a hold of your paper and reads it? Are you opening eyes, or are they kind of bewildered?
I think we're opening eyes. I mean, for our paper, we print about 10,000 copies, and around, you know, probably 9,000 are mailed out to union members, also to elected officials, all the city council members in the county and around the Bay Area. And elected officials get it, and some people that aren't union members may pick it up at a public event, and I think that they would be exposed to, you know, some good information that may get them thinking, you know, on a pro-union way. But for the most part, our paper goes to people that are union members already.
Paul, do you believe it's important that we do that reach out to the not yet union public? And in your opinion, what's the best way we can do that?
It's really important. I think that, you know, there's some unions who have really good, you know, public relations or good outreach, and they promote the idea of having the rank and file workers speak, you know, whether it's at rallies, press conferences, on websites. And that's one good way just to build solidarity among the working class, you know, so that non-union people would read about, oh, you know, this bus driver who's a member of a union is only getting $12 an hour, and it's hard to, you know, afford $2,000 a month rent on that. And so I think that there are some unions who do that really well, of having their members speak and make that link to people who aren't yet in unions. And, you know, and printed work like we do in the labor paper, I think that gets out to people too, and just kind of reinforces that idea that we can get that message out to people who aren't in unions yet.
Any final words for us today, Paul?
Well, again, you know, I think one of the big issues is income inequality here in the Bay Area. It's really exacerbated. You know, we have in San Mateo County, we have the, you know, Silicon Valley moguls who have nice big houses in Atherton, and then we have service workers living in East Palo Alto making just above the minimum wage. So there's an effort to, you know, lift up the wages and to help. Another big issue is the drivers and security workers for high-tech companies that get harassed when they try to unionize, and we're trying to mobilize. There's some victories there with Google and potentially Facebook drivers, bus drivers unionizing, and we're advocating for those people to lift up wages for the low-income workers or lowly paid workers, and address, you know, income inequality. That's a kind of a theme that's running through a lot of the work and the stories that we cover right now.
Absolutely, absolutely, and we appreciate your efforts. How do we find out, do you have a website for the San Mateo Labor?
Yeah, you can go to we're part of the San Mateo County Central Labor Council, so if you go to sanmateolaborcouncil.org, and then there's a link to the labor newspaper on our main Labor Council website.
And if I want to subscribe, can I subscribe there?
Yeah, we do have individual subscriptions available, and there's information on the website about that.
Fantastic. Paul, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Sounds great. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Paul Burton, managing editor of the San Mateo Labor, which is the San Mateo Labor newspaper in San Mateo. In the meantime, folks, just want to remind you, you know, you got to go vote. If you don't vote, shame on you. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is the poster child for anti-union policies, and Trumka says Walker is on his way out in November. Trumka told MSNBC that Walker will lose his seat in this election.
It's not been tough for us to get volunteers in Wisconsin. Because this guy's not only just an anti-worker governor in Wisconsin, he's sort of like the poster child for that across the country. And I think ultimately, all of these races, by the way, are close, but I think we win that.
The latest poll modeling done for the Capital Times newspaper by UW-Madison doctoral candidate Brad Jones shows Democrat Mary Burke slightly ahead of Walker, 50.6% to 49.4% for Walker. Other national and Wisconsin polls show the race is a dead heat. Former President Bill Clinton is scheduled to campaign for Mary Burke in Wisconsin Friday. Trumka says the AFL-CIO is also working hard in Michigan to defeat Governor Rick Snyder, who signed anti-union legislation there known as Right to Work. The Postal Union Alliance is calling for a national day of action November 14th to defend the U.S. Postal Service. The four postal workers' unions say the Postmaster General is poised to make more devastating cuts in service to the American people, so severe that the unions say they will forever damage the U.S. Postal Service. On the chopping block is overnight mail, many more processing and distribution centers, and postal jobs being outsourced to places like Staples stores. Six-day delivery is also threatened, according to the unions. In Connecticut this week, Governor Daniel Malloy and other elected officials joined a rally supporting Yale University grad student employees as they struggle with the university over recognition of their union. The governor and U.S. Representative Rosa DeLauro were among the elected officials urging Yale to recognize the union and negotiate a contract. New York University and University of Connecticut grad student workers have recently achieved recognition of their unions, but so far Yale is not responding to repeated requests that they recognize and begin bargaining with Yale's graduate employees and student organization. The New York City Council has passed a bill requiring immigration authorities to present a judicial warrant before the city would hold an immigrant in custody. It changes current practice, which is to hold immigrants on a detainer request from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE. The council also limited the circumstances in which the city can hold immigrants in detention on behalf of ICE. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio must sign it before it becomes law in the city.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the American Federation of Teachers and its 1.6 million members working to reclaim the promise of public education, health care, and public services for our students, their families, and our communities. More information online at aft.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.